Today is Thursday, July 18, 2019. We're going to have Moshe Soloveitchik share on Parshas Balak.
There are people that brought some items today for the class, and everything that is brought here is really appreciated. So I want to thank everybody who was generous.
Wait.
We're going to ask you to please take your phones, and I'm going to do the same thing. Please shut them down before the train leaves. What's that? No hick next week. Thank you. Yeah. In case you don't know, we're Fleishik tonight. You may not know that, but you know it now.
You got a haircut for your birthday.
And when you're when we're done with the class, Lynn and I are going to be leaving a little bit early. But when you leave, would you please clean off the tables and don't leave, because we may need you for Marav. We'll need everybody to participate if you can. We'd appreciate it. And I'm going to take the time to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos, a good Shabbos, and a happy birthday to my Rebbe.
Moshe,
again, Moshe, we only wish you the nicest things.
Thank you.
You should get lots of nachas from your children and their children and from all your good friends and family. And have a healthy, long life. You and Deborah and everybody in the family. Okay. We're going to start early, people.
So first,
I just want to recognize that in addition to Rabbi Soloveitchik's birthday, which we're celebrating tonight, celebrating the 55th anniversary of my entering Rabbi Soloveitchik's father's shir.
Wow. That's a long time. Mazel tov. 55 years. You remember 55 years ago when I read
it? I remember what he said.
Oh, dear. Can you tell us?
Okay. All right. By the way, I think I was in that chair also.
You were.
I was, yeah. I can tell you.
You can tell too? Really?
Okay. First year of always memorial. All right, just two things. First of all, I want to thank everybody for their good wishes, their cakes, their and the nice words that everybody's mentioned. Secondly, as a statement, I remember my father on his 60th birthday. He said, "Life begins at 60," so I'll say, "Life begins at 70." Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Anyway. The question is what to discuss. At the end, I decided to discuss something connected to Parshas Balak. The Rambam at the end of Hilchos Melachim. So he talks about Mashiach coming. And he says that Mashiach, there's a reference to Mashiach, the Redeemer of the Jewish people from exile, in three places in the Torah. One place is in regard to the mitzvah of tshuva, in regard to tshuva, because the Torah says, "V'shavta Hashem Elokecha," and you shall, the way the Rambam understood it, you shall return. It's a haftacha. It's a commitment. It's a commitment by God that the Jewish people will return. Will return to Him. That's one place. Then I'll say the third place before I get into the second place. The second place is in regard that the Jewish people when they return to Eretz Yisrael, will capture additional lands, and in those additional lands, they will have to add Arei Miklat, cities of refuge. A city of refuge was used for someone who might have killed somebody by mistake, the shogeg. So he would go into stay in the city of refuge until the passing of the Kohen Gadol. And so there will be additional territory that was not given to the Jewish people previously, that they will take possession of, and in those areas they will designate three Arei Miklat, cities of refuge. And then and then he says at the end of Parshas Balak, the Torah tells us about Bilam's statement to the Jewish people, to when he was blessing the Jewish people, or his statement to Balak, whatever you want to call it, and he says there, he says, Arenu v'loata. This is Balak, Perek Chavdalet, Pasuk Yitzayin. Arenu v'loata. I shall see him, but not now. Ashurenu v'lo karov. I will look at him, but not near. So Arenu v'loata, not now, that's David, King David. He's talking about the king of Israel. Ashurenu v'lo karov, according to the Rambam. Rashi explains it a little different. Ashurenu v'lo karov, that's talking about Ashurenu v'lo karov, that's talking about Mashiach, because that's in the distant future. And then he says, Dorach kochav meYaakov, a star has issued from Jacob. That's David HaMelech. V'kam shevet miYisrael, and a scepter bearer has risen from Israel. That's Mashiach. And so far, so on and so on. So in other words, who reveals about Mashiach? Bilam. Bilam reveals about Mashiach. Now, the question is, why is it mentioned in these three places? In other words, these are the three places in the Torah, according to the Rambam, where the coming of Mashiach and the coming of the Gula, of the redemption, is, in a sense, revealed in the Torah Shebichsav, in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, in the five books of Moses. So, why here? Now, let me, as far as the tshuva, the shaftar Hashem al-kecha, and you shall return. And the Rambam understands it as a commitment. God gives a commitment that the Jewish people will return to God. In other words, that's the spiritual gula, the spiritual redemption. The redemption is both spiritual and nationalistic. The v'shaftar Hashem elokecha, that's the spiritual gula. Then, when he talks about the Jewish people returning to the land of Israel and even adding to the land of Israel, that, I think, represents the national gula. And the two have to go hand in hand. The Rambam The Rambam in Hilchos Shuvah says, "Ein Yisrael nigalin el v'tshuvah." The Jewish people will only be redeemed with tshuvah. So the redemption, the national redemption of the Jewish people, has to come with the spiritual redemption of the Jewish people. So they both have to go hand in hand. And I think it represents two perceptions. In other words, the Jewish people on one hand, is a nation. On the other hand, it's a religion. In contemporary society, for the most part, there is a split between religion and nationhood. You can be British, and you could be whatever religion you have. But for the Jewish people, there is no separation. Not that there weren't attempts to do it. And unfortunately, those attempts caused lots of problems. But the spiritual redemption and the national redemption of the Jewish people have to go hand in hand. Now, many times in the early 1800s, part of the problem was when Jews wanted to identify themselves. Now, we as Jews, we are required to be loyal citizens. Loyal citizens of the nation that we live in. But that cannot erase our national identity. In other words, we have to be loyal Americans, but being loyal Americans does not mean and does not necessitate. And even if it did, so then we have to give priority to the fact that we are part of the Jewish nation. But certainly in America, there is no contradiction. You can be a very loyal American, dedicated to your country, and at the same time, you can see yourself as part of the Jewish nation. And I think in that, to a certain degree, that's unique among Jews in contemporary society. In other words, you have people that come to America that have French ancestry, German ancestry, British ancestry, whatever it is. But the more American they become, the less French they become. And with the Jewish people, we have to be on guard that just because we become, and we should become, loyal citizens, and more so, loyal citizens of the country, we cannot take away from our identification as being part of the Jewish nation. And at one time, unfortunately, people had trouble seeing themselves identified with other nations, and still seeing themselves as part of the Jewish nation. You know, it's very interesting that it's brought down in some Svarim that in the time of Ezra, there was already a small community of Jews in what the area that's now considered part of Germany. And a small community had drifted that far. And they sent a response, it's brought in Svarim, they sent a response that you stay in your Jerusalem and we'll stay in our Jerusalem. In other words, and to a certain degree, when the initial, when the Reform Movement initially started, all mention of Jerusalem in terms of the future was erased. And they had the same argument. A matter of fact, so much so, Reb Meir Simcha is the one who brings both these things. Reb Meir Simcha in the Meshech Chachma, he says, and it's interesting, he talked prophetically. At that time, there was a statement once from one of the leading Reform leaders in Germany that at the outset, he said, Berlin is our Jerusalem. Berlin was our Jerusalem. But Meir Simcha brings this down. And he said, it was almost prophetic. He says he must have written this sefer, although it was published later. He wrote the Sefer when he was a young fellow. The Meshech Chachma, his commentary on Chumash. Now, this was probably in the late. He was a student of my great great grandfather, the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi died either in the 1880s or 1890s. I forgot. So he was a student of his. So this was probably written in the 1800s, the late 1800s. And he writes there, he says, the future will probably show that Berlin is not their Jerusalem. That it was a very profound, you know, everybody tries to read things in to that this one knew about the Holocaust and that one knew about the Holocaust. I don't believe any of that stuff. But in terms of the statement that was closest to it among the Svarim, I think Reb Meir Simcha, what he wrote, that probably in the late 1800s, this was the closest that anybody wrote about it. I don't believe he knew exactly what was going to happen. I'm not one of those, but. And the truth is, this has been the history of the Jewish people. Medrash tells us, when did the Egyptians turn against the Jews? When the Jews, in a sense, were giving up their Jewish identity to adapt. There were certain things that they kept, but to a large degree, they in order to accept Egyptian identity, they gave up a large part of their Jewish identity. So this is in terms of the nationalism. In a certain sense, if it were, the early Reform Movement, what they wanted to do was to separate the religion, and now of course they made changes in the religion, but they wanted to see themselves as having the Jewish religion, but being part of the German nation. And at that time, the German nation was perhaps the most liberal of the European nations. But the rush to adopt German nationhood by giving up Jewish nationhood, that resulted in a certain sense of resentment and against the Jewish people. Then. But on the other hand, there are those that wanted some of the some of the earlier Zionistic leaders, they wanted nationhood without, to see Judaism as being a nation without the religion. Even, I'll tell you, even this later, I once read an interview that Moshe Dayan, and I'm not trying to take away any of his accomplishments, that Moshe Dayan gave, and what he said was that the Jewish religion was important for the Jews in exile. But once the state of Israel was established, you can have Jewish identity. You can have Jewish identity without religion. In other words, the whole purpose he saw, when I say purpose, the function of the religion was to keep the Jews identified as Jews in exile.
He gave the Harabayas back to the...
Yeah, that's right. So, but once they enter the land of Israel, so they will have Jewish identity. What would be the Jewish identity? The Jewish identity will be a nationhood identity, not a religious identity. And the truth is, the two have to go together. And then, but the question is, the one pasuk that the Rambam mentions is the psukim that Bilam said. Bilam said, "Arenu v'lo ata, ashrenu v'lo karov." So that's Mashiach. I see the King. I see the Mashiach, but it won't be close. It is going to be down the road. And Darach Kochav Yaakov shaving me Israel. So why is it that in regard to Bilam, the Torah tells us about the coming, the revelation about the coming of Mashiach? Why? I'll tell you a story I heard from my father. My father told me that, when things would get desperate in Europe, that part, that's a little editorializing on my part, but when things would get desperate, people would use these opportunities to proclaim themselves as Mashiach. And they would get followers because the situation in Europe was no good, and the people were desperate. Anything they could grab onto, especially if they were not intellectually... How was Shabtai Tzvi so popular? How did it become so popular? The answer is the Jewish people were desperate. And anything they could grab onto, they would grab onto. So one time, now after the Gaon of Vilna died, so the leader of the Misnagdim in Russia was Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Without any second, he was the clear leader of the Jews in Russia. And he was the one who actually dealt with the Russian government on behalf of the Jewish people. Among the Chassidim, the leader of the Jewish people in Russia was the Tzemach Tzedek. The Baal Tanya for a while also. The Baal Tanya also. Those were the leaders of the Chassidim in Russia. And there was involvement between the two groups. They would very often work together for the Jewish causes when dealing with the Russian government. Anyway, during one of these desperate situations that overtook the Jews in Russia, so a certain man came to Vilna, and there's no way to describe his piety. He looked like such a kadosh and such a holy person and whatever it is, and people began whispering that he's probably the Mashiach. He's probably the Mashiach, and the Russian government heard about it. They were getting upset. To them, that was a revolt. They suspect it, that Mashiach's going to raise an army, and he might start a revolt. So they sent a representative to Reb Chaim Volozhiner and to discuss about this person who never said he was Mashiach, but who people suspected was Mashiach, and the representative of the Tsarist government said to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, "Do you believe he's Mashiach, that he is the Messiah?" So Reb Chaim Volozhiner turned to him and he says, "Tell me, do you believe it?" So he says, "Me? Of course not. It's ridiculous." So Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, "When the real Mashiach comes, you'll believe it also." In other words, recognition of Mashiach, recognition of the Redeemer of Israel, will not just be recognition by the Jewish people. It will be a universal recognition. And I think that perhaps that's the reason why Bilam was chosen to reveal about Mashiach. Because Bilam represented, he was the prophet of the nations of the world. And recognition of Mashiach is not just going to be recognition between me and you. I'm scared that the recognition might first come from the nations of the world and then from the Jewish people. So we are very much influenced by what the nations outside say. So that's why Bilam was chosen. That's why Bilam was chosen to reveal about the Mashiach, because there's the universal perspective of Mashiach. Now, but there seems to be a contradiction. On one hand, Bilam here it has a universal perspective. He's chosen to reveal about the Mashiach. On the other hand, we take a look at the first brochos that he gave, and he says the very opposite. Listen, I'll read in English. From its origin, means Bilam saw the Avos, the patriarchs. And he says, "I see it rock-like, and from hills do I see it. Behold, it is a nation that will dwell in solitude and not be reckoned among the nations. Who has counted the dust of Jacob or numbered a quarter of Israel? May my soul die the death of the upright. My end be like his." So, in other words, it speaks about, on the contrary, the Jewish people being separate from being separate from the nations of the world. So, on one hand, Bilam talks about the Mashiach. Why? Because of the universal perspective. The universal perspective, and we do have a universal perspective. We are concerned about the whole world, and we have to be concerned about the whole world. On the other hand, the Jewish people, the destiny of the Jewish people is that they're a separate nation, a unique nation. The Jewish people, historically, probably as a nation, I'm not talking as a religion now, but as a nation, was the only ones to survive exile. Was the only ones who, as a nation, survived exile for 2,000 years. For 2,000 years. So the Jewish people, how do we survive exile? Because when we war in the other nations, we saw ourselves not just as another nation, but as a different type of nation. most nations are not able to exist for an extended period of time if they are away from their land. The Jewish people alone, not chas v'shalom that we gave up on our land. We never gave up on our land. But as a nation, we were able to exist to close to 2,000 years. Why? Because we saw ourselves as a different type of nation, not a nation that was based on land. It's a nation that has a land, but our nationhood does not emanate from the land. So so on one hand, Bilam, when he gives a universal perspective of Jewish people, and truth is, about the Beis HaMikdash, we say, Ki Beisi Beis Tfila Yikari L'chol Amim. God says, my house will be a house of prayer for all nations. So there's a certain degree, there's a certain degree of universalism. But I have to point out, when we say that the temple will be a house of prayer for all the nations, it doesn't mean for each nation to come to the temple and pray to their God. It means to pray to the one God that we recognize, and that in the future all the nations of the world will recognize. So what we have to understand is there are areas. Avraham, when Avram goes when Avram goes to the Akedah, so he goes Shnei Na'arav Ito, his two servants are with him. And who the Shnei Na'arav? The Medrash says it's Yishmael and Eliezer. And Eliezer was on a very high level. But at a certain point, Vayaras HaMakom Erachot, he saw the place from afar. Vayomer Shvulachem Poem Machamor, stay here with the donkey. Vani Vahanar Nel Chad Ko, and we will go there. So we go from Po to Ko. From here, in other words, there are areas where we are involved with the nations. But there are areas where, as Jews, we have to maintain our own identity, and we cannot surrender our identity, our unique identity, because we have this fantasy that when we surrender our unique identity, we'll be accepted among the nations of the world. And that's the idea from Po, stay here. We will go there. There's a Po and there's a Ko, where there are areas where we go. Shnei Na'aravito, Yachdov. We go together. But the areas, very personal areas, where we have to maintain our separate identities. Now, why did I mention? I mentioned this before, but more and more it's becoming very, very troubling. You know, you can have concepts that are really beautiful concepts, ideas that are very noble, but the way they're applied can have a disastrous effect. And the big word today, when I was a boy, they didn't say it. Now I'm 70 years old. Okay, so the big word today is tikkun olam. That's a beautiful word, tikkun olam. Fix the world. Matter of fact, the God, Asher bara elokim lasos, God created the world in an unfinished manner because he wanted man to become his shutuf, to become his partner. in tikkun olam, in fixing the world. But if you see how it's applied, tikkun olam is applied. Universalism is very important. But we are universalists because we are Jewish. And tikkun olam is the idea that, no, we are Jewish because we are universalists. There's a certain surrender. If you take a look at the Jewish people who unfortunately are involved in the battle against Israel, if you take a look and at one time, those that were against the Jews tried to give up their Jewish identity. Today it's different. Today, no, we are Jews. But we don't like what's happening to the Palestinians. Of course, what happens when the Palestinians go in and put bombs where there are carriages in Jerusalem? That's somehow... Well, what do you expect? That's the response you get. You're not supposed to buy anything that was made in Israel. Who are some of the leaders of this movement? The Jews. Why? Because their Jewishness emanates from their universalism. And that's really what tikkun olam, the word tikkun olam is a beautiful word. But what it's doing is trying to rid us of our Jewish identity. Of our unique Jewish identity. So this is what we have to understand. We have to work, we have to help. We have to help everybody, I always mention the story. My father, whenever I used to go in the subway with him, there was a certain sense of paranoia. He would always make me stand by the wall. Didn't want me to be within 20 feet of the tracks. It was a paranoia. I didn't understand it. It didn't make any sense to me. When my father wasn't there, I'd be looking for the train, But then I found out the story. What happened was, when my father was a young fellow, he was standing by the tracks and doing what I would want to do. And some crazy lady, somewhat mentally ill, she went over, she screamed some anti-Semitic statements and pushed my father on the tracks. But in the process, she also fell on the tracks. So my father was able to get up out of the tracks, and then he helped the lady get out of the tracks. And there was a priest at the train station, and he said, he ran over to my father. I did not hear the story from my father. I heard it when I was a young kid, I don't know from who. And then I heard it from Dr. Kenigsberg, at least part of the story. Dr. Kenigsberg was my father's doctor. My father would tell him over a lot of stories. David Kenigsberg and me were classmates in high school yet. We're still very good friends. We actually learned together every week. So the priest ran over to my father and said to my father, "What's your name?" And my father said, "My name is Aaron Soloveitchik." He said, "Bless me, I never saw a person as holy as you." So on one hand, my father was concerned about every human being. I'll tell you, there's certain things that people would disagree with. But my father told me he was so upset about the bombing of Hiroshima that they used to physically throw him out of shuls. he was physically thrown out of shuls. And he said during World War II, he remembers he was in a subway train, and there was a Japanese fellow. How they didn't send him to those camps, I don't know, maybe it was beforehand. And a lady or a man, whatever, said, "There's a Jap here," and they all get off the train. The only ones left on the train was my father and the Japanese fellow. So it emptied out. That's the way things were in those days. I mean, my father was so concerned. Civil rights. I mean, you just have to read my father's writings, what he felt about civil rights. I mean, so my father, it's not that my father didn't have this attitude that we have to withdraw from the world. But if there's anybody that retained his Jewish identity, not retained, his concern for the world, his concern, there was an argument between two people whether my father was a Wilson Democrat or a Roosevelt Democrat. And they asked me for my opinion. I said, my father is just acting in the way he thinks the Torah would want it to act. It doesn't have anything to do with Wilson, and it doesn't have anything to do with Roosevelt. My father actually hated Roosevelt. So but in other words, the idea is, it's very important, and there's no one who wrote more and both in halacha and in philosophy about our responsibility to the non-Jewish community than my father. But my father felt that emanated from our being Jewish, not vice versa. And I think that's the greatest danger we're facing today. The danger we're facing today is that we think that in order to be universalists, we have to limit our Jewish identity. And what we have to remember is, on one hand, we're a nation, on the other hand, we're a religion. And there's a third thing also. It says that Bilam looked and he saw the forefathers of the Jewish people. As a Jewish people, we're also a family. And why were we able to survive Golus? Why were we able to survive exile? Yes, because we were a religion. But there was another factor also. We didn't have a country. So how do we maintain our nationhood? By being a family. The Jewish people was a family. So when Bilam said that he looks down and he sees, he may surmarenu gvos asherenu, I look down, from the mountains. So it says he looked at the Avos and the Imos. He looked at the patriarchs and the matriarchs. What does that mean? He saw the Jewish people, not just as a nation, not just as a religion, but as a family. And all three go together. It wasn't separate. All three go together. And that's why the Jewish people, that's why the Jewish people were able to survive Golus. We didn't have a land, but the religion and the familyhood, that perpetuated the nationhood. And that's what we have to remember. We have to remember that we're all three. We're a family, we're a nation, and we are a religion. But all three go together, and our we are concerned about all of mankind. But our concern for mankind emanates from our Jewishness, not our Jewishness from our concern for mankind.
How goodly are your tents?
Yeah, that's right.
Ashkar.
Yeah. Happy Federation is essential.
We're going to be davening Marv in about 5 minutes. Jerry, yes.
It's too early?
8:20. In 10 minutes, we'll be davening Marv. Correction.